You're listening to the Laugh Button Podcast on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Welcome back to another episode of the Laugh Button Podcast. I am your host and editor-in-chief of the laughbutton.com, Matt Kleinschmidt. Tumblr.ca.com. And with me again is Bram Teitelman, the editor-in-chief of metalinsider.net. How you doing, Bram?
.gif. I'm sorry. How's it going?
It's good. I'm apparently mattkleinschmidt.com. So how are you? We're here on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com. Anywhere you can type in the Laugh Button into a browser, you will find us. Social media, you will find us on the web, you will find us, all that kind of stuff. And before we dive into anything, Bram, our guest this week I'm really excited about. It's a guy named Joe Sib.
Yeah.
Joe Sib is the co-owner, co-founder of Side One Dummy Records and a stand-up comedian. He's been doing stand-up comedy for the last handful of years. And he and I met via other practices, basically his company doing business with the parent company of the Laugh Button, and he kind of slowly but surely started doing comedy more and more, and that's kind of how our relationship blossomed, was over that stuff too. So we actually sit down when you and I were in LA.
Yeah, I want to actually show people, like Laugh Button podcast listeners, how the sausage is made.
Oh, do you?
Do you know, some of you probably, that
that we record the microphones.
Some of the interviews are recorded
not real time, believe it or not.
And I've been co-hosting quite a few of these,
and this
is the first time I ever got to see an interview recorded.
Was it the first? I thought you were with the Red Fang interview.
Red Fang, that's right.
Yeah, you sat in on the Red Fang interview as well. But yeah, so Joe,
the second time ever.
When we were in California, Joe invited us up to his very nice place, and he had recently converted his garage into a podcasting studio / office, and we broke it in. It was literally the first time anyone had used the podcast portion of his new office. So it was me and Joe sitting down in some very comfortable chairs with some
microphones.
B, Joe, and Bram were in the room.
I documented it.
Bram sat in the corner and documented it as he did some light emailing, and Joe and I talked about comedy in the corner, and we just kind of had this really great conversation about like how he got started, how he kind of his process, the release of his new album, Nowhere Near the Top. He was very excited about that. We kind of dive into all that. So I'm really excited about this this interview,
because it was groundbreaking. I feel like every podcast is groundbreaking. Everyone we do, but this was actually really
every podcast we do is groundbreaking.
Yeah.
I'm kind of I'm going for, what's the name of the guy that does Inside the Actor Studio?
James Lipton.
I'm going for a James Lipton kind of vibe. I want to be the James Lipton of podcasters. So I'm going for a more of a resolute demeanor.
What's your favorite curse word, Matt?
What's your favorite curse word? When you get to the gates of heaven. Yeah, so I'm going for that. No, you hang up, son of a bitch. So I want to talk about a few things before we dive into this interview
with Joe Sib. Let's go. What else did you do this weekend?
That's actually one of the things I want to talk about.
It's called Setup.
Comedy Central's Colossal Clusterfest. I went to Clusterfest this year. It's the first annual, so everyone that went this year went for the first time. And it was in the heart of San Francisco, the Tenderloin area, right near the Bill Graham Civic Auditorium, and I guess that's City Hall, that little like courtyarded out area. And it was Comedy Central's, I guess the best way to describe it is a fan event, a fan experience. They basically did a setup that allowed for stand-up comedy, more act-out improv-y type of comedy, and music. And their tagline was comedy, music, comedy. And the headliners for all three nights, the first night was Kevin Hart, the second night was Bill Burr, and the third night was Jerry Seinfeld. Sarah Silverman.
The B-listers, basically.
Just some schlubs, some up-and-coming schlubs. But, I mean, other talent there was like Pete Davidson, Kyle Kinane, Hannibal Buress, Tig Notaro, Abby Nalana from Broad City were there, TJ Miller was there, Randy Lettke was there, Brendan Walsh, Jay Larson, the goddamn Comedy Jam was there, Fred Armisen was there. So, like, you know, really, really A-level stuff. A-level comedians. And then they also had time for up-and-coming showcases, like newcomers. They did almost like the next wave. They had like a new faces type of stuff. They also did a couple of live podcast tapings. They did How Did This Get Made? They did Anna Faris's Unqualified. There was a couple other ones too. And then they also had some gala type of showcases where, you know, there'd be one host, there'd be an opener, there'd be a direct feature, and then there'd be a headliner. And one of the ones I caught was Hannibal Buress, Tig Notaro, and Nick Vatterott hosted. I'm blanking on who was on between the two, and someone's going to murder me because he murdered and he was awesome. And for some reason, just my mental illness is just kind of my mental facilities.
I'm feeling pretty physical illness.
It is. I'm feeling pretty sick today.
I've been coughing a lot.
I know I have. So I'm just blanking on who was on that. Maybe
I think he caught San Francisco.
We'll put it in. I caught San Francisco, so we'll put it in post. But so a lot, they had all the stand-up comedy was basically inside in the Bill Graham Civic Auditorium. They had the main room, which seated probably about 5,500 people, and that they would do comedy there. Anthony Jeselnik, Pete Davidson, those guys would do probably like a 90-minute show, you know, every couple hours to be a 90-minute show. And then they also what they called the Larkin Room, the Larkin Comedy Room, which is where they taped a lot of the podcasts. And they had the 415 Comedy Club, which was upstairs, which was probably the smallest and was probably about 300. And there they did like a live taping of The Bonfire with Jay Oakerson and Dan Soder. They did a live What's Your Fucking Deal. They did Baron Vaughn hosted a showcase there too. So it was a really fun experience. I mean, the best way I can describe it is when there weren't bands on stage or comedians on stage, a lot of the comedy was inside, but the headliners performed outside. And then outside they would do like a live Gore Burger show or the goddamn Comedy Jams, like stuff that made sense being outside, you know, because comedy really is tough to do outside. So sure. The headliners were basically the big guys outside because they fill up the big place. And it was great. I mean, like for a first year festival, there was probably a lot of things that could have gone wrong for it because, you know, just ironing out the kinks. And Comedy Central had partnered with Superfly Entertainment and another Planet Entertainment. Superfly has done Bonnaroos and all these kind of and Outside Lands and these big festivals. So they knew what they're doing. And it was great, man. Like I'm sure there's some, you know, behind the scenes craziness, stuff got canceled, so-and-so missed this, that, or the other thing. But from the fan experience, the whole goal was to just provide a good time for the fans. And I think they did it. I think Comedy Central really did nail it, you know? So my hat's off to those guys for doing the festival the way they did. They had a lot of really fun attractions. You could walk around like an installment of Patty's Pub. And in Patty's Pub, there'd be some activations like, you know, for obviously the Cavaliers game and Golden State Warriors game was one of the nights. So they had just a screening of that game. But they also did like Always Sunny Bar Trivia, hosted by Joe DeRosa. Mac showed up and bartended a little bit.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. So fun stuff like that. There was a corner where they were singing Dayman, you know, where you could see like the performance. There was the toilets area.
And Seinfeld's apartment was there too, right?
There was. There was an installment of Seinfeld's apartment, which was the only attraction I was unable to get into because it was so popular. The line was an hour plus easily for the entire time I walked by it. I was only there for about a 24-hour period. And I'm actually going to recount everything that I saw or retell the whole story basically on thelaughbutton.com. So if you want this in print, you can basically go on thelaughbutton.com and read the whole thing. But the Seinfeld apartment I didn't make it into because, like I said, because of the line. But they also had like giant head versions of like all the Seinfeld characters walking around. They had the characters from It's Always Sunny walking around too. The soup Nazi was there. The soup Nazi even showed up in a Seinfeld branded restaurant food booth. So a lot of the food booths were like in style and on brand. Like in the South Park area, there was the Whistling Willie's Pizza Wagon where you could get a pizza from Whistling Willie's. There was, you know, you could get the big salad in the soup area with the soup Nazi. So the real soup Nazi was there for a little bit. So there's a lot of that kind of fun stuff. And then bands performed. Ice Cube, Chromeo, Les Claypool did a set.
Did he play the South Park theme?
He did. He did kind of like an all-star jam with like a bunch of guys, and Fred Armisen sat in on that too. So the goddamn comedy jam performed. Trying to think who else was performing, but there was a lot of Tegan and Sarah, I want to say, were there too. It was just a lot of really fun. Like, it was definitely a music festival at some parts, but it was definitely a comedy festival at others, like more so the comedy festival because it was Comedy Central. But like, it's one of those things where I could see an East Coast version of it. I could see a Central, you know, a Chicago version of it too. It could be really, really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds colossal.
Yeah, I mean, like, and like the name of it was great, and the imaging was really good, and like, you know, the merch sales kind of like, they had some really great merch with that comedy music, comedy tagline. So it really did, I mean, for first year festival, I was really surprised in how well it all kind of came together. My hat's off to Comedy Central for being able to pull it all off. And they had said, hey, come out and check this out. And I was like, sure, I'm in LA. I'll fly out to San Francisco. It's like a 45-minute to an hour flight. So I made that flight, and I was out there, and I hung out there for about a solid 24 hours, and it was great. So my hat's off to Comedy Central again. Got to give those guys props. So
beautiful.
Yeah, hopefully they'll do it again, and there'll be another one, and it'll be all kind of good stuff, too. So while that was my weekend, other crazy news broke this weekend too, and I want to kind of get into, and maybe this might be a little bit.
Comey, right?
No, he's testifying tomorrow, today. Well, today. The time of this podcast, he'll be testifying.
Yeah. And that's not very funny, actually.
They're taping the new season of This Is Not Happening this week in Los Angeles. They're taping it this week. I want to say they're taking a week off and taping it the week after that. They're doing a bunch of tapings. And Ari Shaffir, the host slash co-creator of This Is Not Happening, is not hosting the season. And it happened very, very last minute.
Oh.
They actually have tapped Roy Wood Jr., the correspondent from The Daily Show, to host This Is Not Happening. And I saw Roy very briefly at Clusterfest, and he was talking about how he's trying to prepare himself, and, you know, he was really looking forward to going down there and doing it. And it's, I don't want to say it's suspect, the replacement of Ari Shaffir, but a day prior to this announcement, Ari announced he was putting out two Netflix specials.
Oh.
So there's a lot of people running with the theory that Ari made the announcement of the Netflix specials and therefore his relationship with Comedy Central soured, and that happened. So, I mean, it's clearly just a rumor. Ari has not said that. He actually went on his podcast to say that, you know, he basically said due for unforeseen circumstances, the show must go on, and Roy's hosting. He's still an executive producer and creator of the show, so it's not like he's completely like dissolved from being associated with the show. But the timing has a lot of people questioning whether or not it actually is there something more nefarious, or it just was Ari just had something, an actual scheduling conflict. So it's very interesting. So I'm curious to see how that kind of happens and plays out in the wash too. You never know. Also on the website this week, we kind of do a rundown of Norman Lear's new show, which he basically talks to a bunch of 90-plus-year-old people about their lives, about, like, you know, what it's like to be, you know, that old and how they're living and all that kind of stuff. And he finds a lot of humor in that. And I fucking love Norman Lear. I don't know if you're a fan or not, but, you know, he's responsible for some of the most iconic sitcoms of all time.
Yeah, I mean, how can you not be of a certain age and be inspired by Norman Lear?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. And I think that, like, Norman Lear's got, like, a good track record too. I mean, the Carmichael Show came back on the air very recently, and Gerard Carmichael, his new show is very right. Norman Lear inspired, where they tackle tough subjects. Like this past week, they covered rape and supporting the troops, like stuff like that. Where for a comedy show, those are like kind of taboo subjects and topics. So it's kind of interesting seeing like Gerard Carmichael pick up that Norman Lear.
More the rape one than the supporting our troops
one. And also premiered this week was the new Jim Jefferies show. Did you get a chance to check out the new Jim Jefferies show?
I saw the billboard. Los Angeles. Yes, that's right. As far as I've gotten so far.
The show's good. I mean, like, I was expecting a little bit less. There's still, like, guys sitting at a desk talking about clips and stuff like that. So while that has happened.
Does he ever read a newspaper on fire like the billboard?
No, he might. Okay. He might, but he definitely has a more laxed atmosphere. Like sometimes he's leaning back behind the desk, but like I would like to, I don't want to say I want to break him from the typical late night mold, but you know, I don't think he's doing himself any favors differentiating by sitting on a desk talking about topical news subjects. Like, I think there could be a little bit more to it, and hopefully there'll be, as the show develops and whatnot, it'll be less of a...
Wait, a white guy sitting behind a desk well, reading he makes stuff that joke. About news?
He makes that joke, like, you know, an immigrant took a white guy's job.
Yeah.
But I like it. I really do. I like Jim Jefferies' point of view. I like his position on stuff, but it is kind of I think that more can be done to differentiate it from, like, you know, I don't want people calling it a Daily Show clone, because I think Jim Jefferies has a unique voice, and you don't want necessarily like that kind of like stink on you, I guess.
It's on Comedy Central, right?
It is on Comedy Central.
Well,
so
you're going to get called any kind of news digest host advice on one is going to be called
but,
a Daily
you know,
Show.
I mean, you can, but I think at the same time, I think you could do stuff to differentiate yourself, and I'm just think it's he's going to have to figure out how to do that stuff.
Sure.
Who knows? And then also this week on Comedy Central, you know, because I think this became a Comedy Central podcast, but between Clusterfest and everything they have premiering this week. But Jordan Klepper, who's taking over for the Larry Wilmore spot 11:30, his new mockumentary called Jordan Klepper Saves Guns,
right.
Or Solves Guns. I'm sorry, Jordan Klepper Solves Guns. Is going to premiere on Comedy Central on Sunday night too, so that'll kind of prime everybody for the forthcoming late night host that will be Jordan Klepper from The Daily Show too. So there's a lot going on, as you can tell. Go read about all of it on thelaughbutton.com. I think we're going to take this opportunity right now to do a small little break and then kick it to our interview with Joe Sib. So here it is on Laugh Button Podcast, Joe Sib. Yeah, that's what happens when you get old, man.
Yeah. Have you had to back the readers yet?
No, I luckily have not had to deal with teeth and or eye problems my entire life.
You know what I just realized?
What's
is that? The last time we talked on the phone, I asked you the same question.
Well, that's
have you had to deal with the readers?
It's because you're getting old, Joe.
Dude, I'm not though. It's
you're
just
not. I know
these things, but my vision. I was saying the other day that my vision went so quick.
Yeah.
That if any other health ailment hits me, like my vision, like I don't even know if I'll be here to see this tonight. Like, if you know what I'm saying, like it was like 1 minute I was able to read everything, and the next minute I'll never forget. I was at a restaurant with my wife, and we got in an argument because I said, "Someone's getting fired." And she's like, "What are you talking about?" And I go, "These menus were printed way too small. No one can read this." And she's like, "Joe, you need to get glasses." And then I went for like cool guy and got like the rad subscription, you know, the rad whatever. And then now I'm the dude that just goes to like the pharmacy.
Do you buy them off like the rack at the Rite Aid or whatever it is?
Yeah, that guy. Don't even care.
Welcome back to Getting Old with Joe Sib.
Jeez. For all you youngins out there, take care of your eyes.
Very much so. So, Joe, I'm excited that you're on our podcast.
I'm stoked to be here.
I'm excited for a few reasons. One, it's been a while since you've been on the podcast. Two, since then, you've released an album.
Gosh.
Which is incredible.
Yeah.
Three, you recently moved your business somewhere else.
Yep.
Four, we're breaking in your brand new podcast studio.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is the biggest thing up here in the hills of California.
There you go.
Yeah, just sitting in what is a converted garage into this lovely. I'd be jazzed if I had a podcasting space like this.
Yeah, no, man, first of all, we give a shout out to my hood, Glendale. We're in Glendale, California.
I didn't know if we wanted to be that specific.
Oh yeah,
to tell people where you lived,
dude.
Didn't need people knocking on your door.
I want people to come by kebabs all day long.
Come by, Joe has kebabs.
I live in Glendale. We are an Armenian community. Everyone here is Armenian except me. Mm-hmm. And they love me because I look Armenian. So
you do.
As long as I don't talk. Dude, I swear, I love living here. I never got to grow up in like an Italian neighborhood.
Yeah.
So this is the closest that I think I'll ever have. This community of Glendale now is a lot more, you know, I saw a dude the other day with like a little mustache and like hipster pants. And I was like, wow, like because when I first moved to Glendale, people were, because, you know, I was living in Hollywood forever.
Yeah.
And people were like, Glendale, man. And when you live in LA, everything is judged by how far away it is.
Yeah, I mean,
so it's not like New York.
I've been in LA for a day and a half now, and all the conversations seem to be dominated by how you drive there and how the weather. It's like, is that all you guys talk about here?
It is totally like the Saturday Night Live skit, the Californians.
The Californians.
I mean, it is like
I remember. Is that why that sketch resonates so much with people?
Dude, how about this?
Because I watch it, I'm like, I don't know what I don't have no idea what this
is. How about this? Okay. Watch that skit being from LA. I remember seeing the first time Fred Armisen did it, and I didn't laugh.
Because you were angry?
No, I just was like, what are they talking about? Yeah, they're talking about the 405 to the 134. Over. I was like, oh, it's like the first time I saw Spinal Tap. I didn't get it. I was like, what's so, I don't understand what the joke is.
You were too close to it.
So close to it. That's so bad.
So I'm really excited to finally be able to talk to you about like your career in comedy, because you actually now have a career in comedy.
Gosh, do you like Matt?
You had a career when we first met.
You're responsible for that career.
I can't take credit for it.
You and Alice.
I refuse to take credit for it.
Just keeps doing that.
Oh, okay. I was just making sure because it went to like a different screen.
Nah, dude.
Like, all right, cool. Scared me.
That's called the hiccup.
Is that what that is?
Yeah. I like doing that to people so they go, did you lose everything? And what we're talking about, we had a little momentary lapse in the podcast studio.
Yeah, so sorry about that. So your career in stand-up comedy has done nothing but blossom in the last couple of years. It's been great.
Thank you.
I remember when I first started talking to you about it, 5 years ago? Six years ago, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I first, first of all, the relationship with Syndicate goes so far back with Cy One Dummy.
Syndicate's a parent company of The Laugh Button.
Yeah. And the
Cy One Dummy is your company.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So the thing that kind of happened, just like a snapshot really quick, was I have this record label called Cy One Dummy. Mm-hmm. And at the time I was basically doing this like spoken word show.
California Calling. Yep.
And it got on the radar of some different people here in LA and just a thing. And then basically I wanted to take it on the road. So then I reached out to the folks at Syndicate because we were working with them with all our bands. And then they were like, hey, check it out. You should meet Chris and Matt because we're doing a thing called Laugh Button. And I was like, okay. And then that really kind of turned into the relationship I started with you guys.
Yeah.
But I always remember the best thing that I remember about you, Matt, was And this happened with a few. I was telling someone else about this today with this guy named Mark Flanagan from the Largo.
Okay.
He runs the Largo here in Los Angeles. Very, very cool.
How did this get made? Those live podcasts there like every week?
Okay. Long story short, the thing that happened was I was like, going down this world of spoken word and telling stories. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, I'm doing stand up. Mm-hmm. And I remember you and Jack Vaughn, mm-hmm. Another comedy guy
over
and
at SiriusXM.
Over
right
SiriusXM. And at that time he was at Comedy Central. And then my friend Flanagan, they're like at three different occasions, everyone was like, you're not doing stand up, you're doing storytelling.
Yeah.
And I remember I'm like, well, what do you mean? And I remember each person was like, look, if you want to do stand up, you know, that's a whole different game. Mm-hmm. And if you want to do storytelling, you're already doing that.
Yes.
But I remember specifically having a lot of conversations with you, mm-hmm. a lot of conversations with Jack Vaughn, and a lot of conversations, more with Jack Vaughn, you,
yeah.
and Ellis, Chris Ellis, and with Flanagan. But it was always about like trying to maneuver, because I was coming from this music background,
yeah.
and I was so, I didn't know what I was doing,
mm-hmm.
and trying to figure it out. And you guys were always like, all right, you know, this is kind of what you're doing. I remember even like, I think I would send you like bits, like, is this a bit, you know? And you'd be like, no, that's more of a story. Okay. Or like, I remember, you know, what do you guys think about this set? Like, okay, now you're, you know, now it's starting to go in stand up.
Well, it's true though, but like, I think that's how most stand up starts though, is you have a story to tell and you find the funny parts of it, which is kind of like where you're at. You were like, I have these great stories and all these memories of, I mean, shit. I'm trying to remember what California Calling's back. I'm going back a couple years, but like, it's stories about how you hung out with the Ramones,
yeah.
dressed up as the Pinhead.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, yeah.
Were a skater kid growing up,
yeah.
and being a dad.
Yeah.
You know, that's yeah. kind of all your stuff, and yeah. you just had to figure out to distill it to find the beats in it,
and
you
also
to do
yeah.
that. Yeah,
and also trying to, like you just said, finding the beats and yeah. also condensing it.
Yeah,
like just I remember talking to a friend of mine. He was like. It was Greg Barrett, comedian,
yeah.
and
yeah.
he gave me some great advice one night. He said, "Joe, words are like furniture.
And I was move like, them around."
And he goes, "You move them around until you find the right spot."
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, "Okay." And then I worked on that. And you know what's funny with stand up, and this is what's so bad with me, is that I'm not good with long. With stand up, you have to take your time, and yeah. I've never been someone that wants to. I mean, I'll take my time to do a good job.
Yeah.
But what I realize now with stand up is that you're only going to get good and get to that place that you want to be if you really put in the time. And now I understand why other comics that I saw and that I would you know think are amazing or just respected, why they would have. Kind of I would give a little stink eye to a younger yeah. comic or a comic that would come in and just kind of have this like 10-minute set that destroyed, but didn't have anything more than that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that's great, right? And then you realize the longer you are around and the longer you stay in the game, how it's all about the craft and mm-hmm. how it's about the artwork of it. And it's about working on that. And that was the thing that happened where I finally was like, you know what? I'm going to really like dig my heels in and I'm going to really try to watch and learn. And for the first time in my life, I'm going to fucking shut up. I'm going to listen.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I, you know, I was like, I'd go to shows and because I was in LA, you know, I was able to see people like Eric Griffin, Daniel Tosh, Dane Cook, who else? Chris D'Elia, Bill Burr, Dom Herrera, just these lineups.
Yeah.
Chappelle, when yeah. he was coming back.
Those guys are hammers,
and,
man.
And I would just go, you know what? I would do my set. And then I'd go and I'd sit in the corner and I would just sit there and I'd go, I'm gonna watch stand-up comedy from now until it's time to go home.
Yeah.
And I would just sit there and take it in. And I remember the first time I saw like Bobby Lee and you know, how physical he was. I was like, I wrote down notes like, be more physical, you know, which I'm like, you can't be like Bobby Lee, you know, I can't.
No,
you know,
but that's also a big part of comedy in general and stand-up is everyone seems to start imitating somebody.
Totally.
It's like Patton Oswalt has this whole thing about, I started and I realized I was just aping X, Y, and Z comedian. And that's why I think the time takes it, because it takes time to be comfortable on stage. It takes time to get on stage and be like, I'm going to tell something and maybe it's not going to work and I'm not going to feel the pressure of, oh my God, everyone's staring at me in their eyeballs. Like that flop sweat. when comedians first get that, everyone has that. And they're like, oh, shit, what do I do? But the good ones are like, I can dig out of this because I know what I have the tools in my toolbox.
Yeah, the tools in the toolbox, I would say I was super fortunate in this.
Yeah, you do have it. You kind of had a little bit of a head start.
Only because of being in a band since I was, 15. Mm-hmm. I remember watching bands, and I did the same thing. I remember for years, it's the same thing for being a singer in a band. For years, I wanted to be Ian MacKay from Minor Threat, and then I went into, I'm going to be Kevin Seconds from 7 Seconds, and then you start learning, okay, as a singer, I'm not neither one of those guys, because both of them are awesome, and I ain't. So you start figuring out what your thing's going to be, and then you see the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, and you're like, I'm going to be like Dickie Barrett, and then you realize, I can't do that either. Yeah. So you slowly... But what you slowly start doing is you slowly start giving a nod and kind of grab a little piece from him, a little piece from her, take a little piece from him, and you start creating the front man that you're going to be. And then one tour, all of a sudden, you slide into really who you are. And with stand-up, I did the same thing in the sense that I knew I wasn't going to pinch from the thing was, though, I couldn't pinch from comics like the way they would deliver their material because I couldn't even speak that way on stage. I remember a friend of mine said, man, you know what, dude, the good thing with you is you got one good thing going for you and one bad thing. And it was a club owner, and I'm like, what is it? And he goes, first of all, no one will ever be able to take your material and do it over again.
Exactly.
Because of the way you talk. He goes, Joe, just the way you sound and talk is just, it's your whole thing. Mm-hmm. The bad news is you don't have any material.
Yeah.
So no one's going to steal it, but don't worry about it. But, and I remember he said, you've got great stage presence and you know how to do all that, but you have, and I remember he was like, you just don't have the, you don't
just
have any material.
Just got to write some jokes.
And I remember hearing that but it was weird. I didn't get bummed because I knew it was true.
Yeah.
Instead, I remember I was like, I have to write a joke.
Yeah.
Like, I have to see if I can write a joke. And I remember I that was like my mission and I was getting up at all these open mics, just like anywhere I could get up. And it was just like, okay, how do I take this story and make it funny? And it was like you said, it was trying to find these beats, but it was so like a science experiment for me.
Yeah.
And I just nerded out on it.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of have to. And this generation of comedy fans, I think what I love about it is you have access to such a wealth of comedy. Like, you could pull up anyone on YouTube, on the internet, and you know them, and you're like, oh, this is how so-and-so did it. Whereas back in the day, you might not have had been readily that access. You might not have had that access readily available to you.
No, I mean, I think everyone before all of that information that was available, you would read Steve Martin's Born Standing Up.
Yep.
Maybe another few books.
You'd see a documentary or two or something like that. You wouldn't have it. Now
you could
take a weekend and become a Bill Hicks expert.
I mean, have all these great little pieces. Like I the other day someone sent me, I want to say it was Greg Barron again. He sent me this great link to Louis C.K., a bit that he had done being broken down by someone. And it was written out.
Yeah,
and it was so silly because, I have two kids that are 13 and 16 years old, and I've never sat down with a parenting book and read a paragraph as much as I read this paragraph. Uh-huh. This guy was analyzing why Louis C.K. put the word "but" here and then had a pause here, and I was just like,
that's
incredible. Oh my God, I love this.
Almost like how you would diagram a sentence in like grade school or something.
Absolutely.
Like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No different than when you were kids and you would see some guy in the lab breaking out the chromosome structure. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh man, that's lame. And you're like, right now, I'm like, I'm that guy.
Yeah.
I love studying. One of my favorite things I read it with someone was like, yeah, when I hear like a one-liner that I really like, I always come home that night and I write it out because I just like looking at it. I won't do it on my phone either. I want to write it with my hand. There was this one-liner that Rodney Dangerfield had a while ago that it was like, it was him on the couch with like Johnny, or sitting in the chair next to Johnny Carson. And, you know, he was the one line master, but
yeah, of course.
I was watching it. And I was just like, oh my God, this is so great. And it was just one after another, dude, like a one liner, like those comics, like Mitch Hedberg or him. It's like a muscle. It's like watching a boxer or watching a, like watching Kelly Slater surf or Tony Hawk skate. You're just watching like perfection and you're like, okay, I ain't going to do that. You know?
Yeah. And some guys are just born to do that.
And I remember this, the one liner he had, he said, yeah, I said to my kids, someday you're going to have kids of your own. And my kids said, yes, so will you. And I was like, I remember I used to know how many words were in it.
Yeah.
And I was like, gosh, for 12 words, what a punch
There's no fat on that joke.
There's no fat on that joke. And it's such a heavy joke.
Yeah.
Like, hey man, you're acting like a brat, and someday you'll know what it's like to have kids. And then the kid throws back, someday you'll have kids of your own, insinuating we're not even yours. Holy, like, what?
And that's a great joke. I mean, like, what I love about one-liners, and Hedberg's a great example of this, is like, you could write his jokes out and deliver it. Anyone can deliver it, and it's fucking funny.
Because it's that good.
It's that good. Now, it's 10 times better the way Mitch Hedberg delivers this jokes, but you still see, like, oh, there's the mastery in that. And some comics are great with that, and some comics, it's 95% the sell. You know what I mean?
Totally. On stage.
It's like, some comics, like, they got to sell it. And if you write out, and there's a lot of guys that say, I want to say Louis is one of those guys, if I'm not mistaken, who says that, you know, if you write a joke out with that, take away all the inflections and write it out, and if it's still funny, it's a good joke.
Yeah.
Like, there are comedians that, like, strive for that. And then there's
George Carlin, I think, was that way.
Yeah, exactly.
You read his stuff now, American Dream.
Yeah.
You read that, and you're not really laughing because all the stuff he's talking about has come true, and that was a joke.
Yeah. Exactly.
And he was one of those guys that when his whole thing was he would write it and then perform it, opposed to the other Tyler comic that's like, I'm going to work it out on stage. You know, the prior style, you're going to come out, you're going to go, hey, I got this concept. I'm going to each night tweak it and mold it and shape it. And it's just two different styles of work.
Completely two different styles. And I don't know if one's better than the other. I think it's just a matter of your personality. Like, I think it was Dennis Miller once said he doesn't test out new material. He writes it and he knows what's funny versus not funny.
Wow.
So he just like writes it and then goes on stage and delivers it. And like, that's a special. And that blows my fucking mind.
Yeah.
Because first of all, he's a very intelligent man, but like at the same time, you're like, really? You're going to go and just not have that? You're going to be like that reliant upon your skill? Like, I don't know. Like, I would just perform in front of someone.
I
couldn't do that.
Much confidence, amazing. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I'm not gonna have that. I don't have any confidence anywhere in my life that I'm that safe and secure.
Joe, you've done very well with your life.
It's been practiced, dude.
But at the same time, like, I feel like you're one of those people who just by sheer will of wanting to do something, like you're like, I want to do this. I don't know how to do it yet, but I'm gonna fucking figure it out. And like, I think it's afforded you a lot of cool things in life.
Yeah, that's called obsessive compulsive. And my daughter has it, which we should get her to come in.
But you know,
ask, and she'll tell you why she sweeps her room in the middle of the night.
Oh, okay.
Because her dad did that.
But there's people on this planet that some of them just have a motor.
Yeah.
And the motor is, I want to get up every day and just do things. Yeah. Like, I got friends like that, and I'd much rather have those people that, like, in my life doing things and just, like, maybe a couple people that sit around and talk about what they want to do with their life. Like, you know, like, you're like, I want to do, like, you were like, I want to be in a band. I start a band. I want to start a record label. I want to start one of the most successful, like, indie independent labels out there. So I want to start comedy, so I'm going to just do it. I want to create a podcast, so I'm going to create a podcast. There's doers and there's not doers, and you're definitely a doer. You know what
I mean? It's the thing that I would say, man. And hearing you say that, I'm like, wow, man, fuck, I did a lot of rad shit. No, that's still, you know, because I mean, if you were here an hour ago, I was talking to my wife, going, oh my God, what am I? I don't have a spot this week. I mean, it's so weird.
Well, that's comedy, addicting. Dude.
It's so, I've never been into drugs, and now, dude. People are gonna find me, like, if I lose everything, it's because of stand-up comedy. I swear to God. Like, before stand-up, I remember
you were home at night with your wife and kids?
Yeah. You know what's funny? Before I found out about this thing called getting a laugh, yeah. I was so just, you know, you're going through your life and everything's cool, and then all of a sudden you go out one night and it's so funny because I heard Seinfeld talk about it. He has that joke about the comics that get like a train breaks down and they're going across the snow field and it's all these comics and musicians and they're trying to get to the next place to catch the next train. Mm-hmm. I'm totally saying the story wrong, but he says, as they look in the distance, they see a house and they see a family sitting around and they're having dinner and they all look at each other and they say to each other something to the effect of like, glad we're not in there.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And you know, the irony of like, dude, you're in the snow, but you still want to get to the gig.
Yeah.
And I swear, it's like the thing that's so, I don't, you know, I fell in love with show business. Like I'm so like, I realized it's, you know, starting a band, starting, you know, like, and it never was like, I mean, I tell people this all the time, you know, it's not like there's talent. It's, I'm a full product of, cause I've been around super talented people.
Yeah.
And a lot of super talented people, unfortunately, don't have the greatest work ethic.
Yeah, of course.
And that sucks. And I know you know comics like that.
Mm-hmm.
We know musicians like that.
Yep.
Just people that you were like, oh my gosh, you are so talented. And they have their moments. And then you have people that have talent, you know, but they have this work ethic and this don't take no as an answer or take no as an answer and drink more coffee and get another yes out of someone.
Yeah.
I'm of that. World.
There's a high school analogy you can play here is there's the kid that sits in the back of the class, just kind of goofs off the whole year round, but does really well on the tests, and they get a good passing grade. And then there's the kid that sits in the front of the class, does the homework, does the extra credit, does all the assignments, and does just as well. It's just two different approaches. Some of it's a natural ability, and some of it's just like sheer tenacity. And if you don't have one, you should have the other.
And I would have been the dude in the middle of the room that was bros with the dude in the back and would say, dude, when the test comes up, can you hook me up? And he'd say, I'll get the answers from the dude up front.
There you go.
that was kind of my thing. But the journey with stand up and even with when we made the record and all that stuff was just the I really got to say now I understand why people say, you know, it takes time. You gotta put the time in, and it's nothing because when I was in a band, you and I could say, Matt, dude, you know, when you come out to LA, let's fucking jam at the Troub, you know, and you'd be like, all right, what songs do you want to do? And I'd be like, you know, learn these, boom, 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 and I would sing, you know, I'd practice in the car, I'd do my whole vibe, and then you'd play guitar or whatever you're gonna do, and then we'd show up, we'd run it at a soundcheck, and then we would blast those three songs that night, and everyone would be stoked. Stand-up ain't like that.
No.
You have to have a crowd. You have to have people in front of you. And you can't, that's the reason why, going back to a few seconds ago, why I'm cringing so much this week that I don't have a spot, to the point where my wife and I were talking and she's like, what's going on with you? And I'm like, I don't know. She's like, you don't have a spot this week, do you? I'm like, no. And she's like, well, you're so much in a better mood when you have at least one spot.
I mean, but that's a test of a comedian too. I know plenty of comedians that are like, oh, I've been up in a week and I'm just jonesing for it. It sounds like a drug. It's like I need to hit the next high. And it's obviously addictive personality. And, you know, hopefully like there's some comedians kind of find addiction other places too. But I don't know, man. Like, you mentioned Seinfeld, and the thing that always pops into my head about Seinfeld when people talk about stand-up comics is like he's a pure comic, and because the documentary comedian, I don't know if you're familiar with this documentary or not.
Is it the which one was that?
It came out literally right at the end of Seinfeld, the show ending.
So is it him where he's cruising around trying to get a set together?
Yes, basically.
And,
it came out.
And it's also with
in the 90s.
Guy, and it's with the guy that he's.
Ornie Adams.
Yeah, Ornie Adams. Who's
basically doing his first letterman.
First letterman, and he has to change the set back at the hotel.
Yep.
And he's calling his parents, telling them where to watch it. It's a
great documentary.
Great documentary.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's the one thing I always remember about it was I think it might have been Ornie. Am I saying his name?
Ornie Adams.
Yeah. When he had. He had all his jokes like in a vault of like, oh, I have jokes for weddings. Yep. Oh, you want jokes, you know, this. Oh, you want jokes. I was like, whoa.
Joan Rivers had that too.
Joan Rivers has that too.
It was like a card catalog.
Yeah.
You know,
was that in there as well?
No, that was from her documentary.
From her documentary,
Piece of Work, which is a great documentary.
Which is a great documentary. I loved how much she wrote every day.
She wrote all the time.
Love.
And I feel like that's why she was still very relevant up until the day of her passing. But back to Seinfeld, real quick, is he was a pure comedian because Seinfeld had just ended. He has more money than he ever knows what to do with. So he got syndication dollars, got everything he has, millions, probably billions of dollars, whatever it is. And he's thinking about, how do I get my next 5 minutes of comedy together? And like that's shows the power of stand-up too, is that like if you're a pure comedian and you're not using this to launch you into other things and your only job and your only will in life is to make people laugh, like it doesn't matter. The money is great, don't get me wrong, and it's good to like have that foundation, but like he just wants to get the next fucking laugh.
Yeah.
That's all he wants to do. So like I always think about that in my head of like there's some comics out there that want to just kind of like use it as a launching pad for something else. And then there's guys that are going to do it until the day they die because of the high they get from telling a joke.
Yeah. And that exists in so many different atmospheres. You know, absolutely. I remember as a kid, it was skateboarding. You know, like skateboarding for me was such a lifestyle. And then there was kids that were at the ramp just to hopefully meet girls or score drugs. Yeah. With music, same thing. There was guys.
Start a band to meet girls and score drugs.
Yeah, or I went through the whole era of to get signed. Everyone wanted to get signed. Are we getting signed? Are you getting signed? Who's getting signed? How much did you get signed for? Signed. I mean, that's everything. Hey, and sure, at a certain time in my life, we did get signed, and that was that you need that in your life. Mm-hmm. But I remember being like, I'm playing music because I have to. Mm. I have to get in this van every night and drive, 6 hours a day to go play music. I have to get on stage and I have to be up here with these five dudes or four dudes and sweat it out. Like, I remember when I was on tour in a band, and it's still the same thing with me with stand-up, is I love everything about the show. I love getting to the venue. Like, I was just at Comedy Works in Denver, and, it's such an amazing venue. But, you cruise in there, and I got there right before the show, and they're opening doors, and it's like, is there a line out front? Yeah. Okay, cool. So you're, like, stoked on that. Yeah. And then you come downstairs, and they're having the staff meeting with all the, wait staff, and you're, like, you're hearing them. Okay. Yeah. And you're like, okay, cool. Yeah. And they all look at you like, there better be people here so I make some money. And you're like, there is, so don't hate on me. Yeah. And then you go back, and then I always love going to the sound guy, like, hey, dude, is it cool? I made a playlist. I want to play music. And they're like, yeah, sure. And they always like that. And then you're like, all right, you start meeting the other comics on the show. And then it's just that energy. It was the same thing when I was in a band. I used to love, I remember there's this bar in New York called the Continental. I remember I was in there shaving before a gig once. I'm so lucky I didn't get hepatitis C. It was just like, you don't shave in that bathroom.
No, that bathroom, and that place was a dive.
Yeah, and I remember the guys, we were playing with Degeneration wasn't on the bill, but they were there hanging out with us at soundcheck, and they said, wow, we can't wait to go on the road and do that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, do what? They're like, shave in the dirty bathroom. And I was like, wow. And I'm ironing a shirt on the stage. And, all those things.
You're getting very prepped for the Continental.
I know.
Now, for people that don't know the Continental, this room we're in is bigger than the Continental. Yeah. About the same size. Yeah.
But I was, the thing was, I was so in love. Mm-hmm. And as I am fortunate enough at this age to still perform and do shows, you appreciate it. And I realize it, for me, it's always been about the live show, whether when I was in a band or being a stand-up.
Yeah.
I love the live show.
Well, there's that instant gratification, and it's almost like this weird ecosystem or this weird symbiotic relationship of like you say something, the audience responds back to you, and then you give back and hear it. So there's this nice ebb and flow. It's really cool. So I get it. Like the live performance, there's nothing quite like the live performance. It's like it's like your favorite band, you got to see them live. Your favorite comedian, you got to see them live, because there is that live anything can happen element to it. It's what makes live television so sexy to people. It's one of the most enticing reasons that Saturday Night Live first had.
Sneezed.
Yeah.
Editing it out.
No,
live.
Man. We ain't doing shit as far as editing.
One thing I was going to say too, the thing too, I think that like the one element too that you can't plan for is just the idea too, when you're doing stand-up, there's this, I always hate when people say, man, it takes balls to do that. Because it doesn't.
Yeah.
It takes ignorance. I mean, not ignorance like a stupid person getting up there.
No.
But it really takes blind. Think about it. When you say to yourself, like, hey, man, I'm going to go to this club and there's 300 people in there. I don't know any of them. There's one microphone. There's no one on stage. They're going to intro me and I'm going to go up there. And I think I'm so funny. And everything that I have going on in my little world in Glendale with my kids and my garage or whatever, you know, and I'm going to go up there in my black t-shirt with my slick back hair and I'm going to say some things that are super, super funny. That's not in my, this is just my opinion. People probably get upset. Like, I don't think it's a thing of like balls and I'm so confident because I think I'm rad. I think it's like a weird fetish with like like when you know, have you ever been up against a glass window at like, you know, 40 stories and you're like, fuck, dude, I just want to jump out. You know, or like when you're like, dude, that fucking train is coming, I want to jump in front of it. You know, like it's this weird like I want to fucking get up there and see if I can pull it. And then and then you do it. And you're like, holy shit, I did. And they laughed and they liked it. And then that adrenaline. And then the other thing is that there's this weird thing of like every time you go, you get up there and there's a moment I always go, I'm not pulling it. I'm not going to pull it. I'm not going to pull it. I'm not going to pull it. And you know, and there's even, you know, and sometimes when, you know, even when you have that moment when you're not pulling it, you know, now I'll sit in that moment and be like, whoa, I'll look around the room and just be like, this ain't happening, and almost really wanna you know, to hear that silence and like feel that kick to the nuts of like, wow, they're really not grooving on this right now. And sure, when you're starting, you're like, that's usually when you're like, well, that's it for me, I'm out of here.
But
when you have material, it's so nice to go, oh, so you're not into that? That's cool. I know you're gonna like this, but it's weird now. I'll, when it goes that way, you know, I'll be like, I want to feel that kick to the nuts for a second. Yeah,
I mean, I know comedians that sometimes have deliberately dug the hole just so they can get themselves out of the hole. You know, just like, tonight's going to be one of those nights where I'm going to figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, I want to go in here and dig the hole, or I'm going to go in there with completely new stuff.
Yeah.
And just, I don't know where the beats are yet, but I'm just going to say it and see what it sounds like.
Yeah.
You know, vocalized over.
Yeah. I feel like when you see those shows for a comic and they dig themselves out, that to me is the, those are some of the best nights ever.
It is. I mean, it's one of those things. I mean,
I'd rather see a set like that than, hey, you know, sure, if we're at the taping, I want to see the polished set and
of course,
I'll be part of the party.
But if it's in a club, you know, and you spent $5 to get in, and
I've seen Dave Attell go up on stage and have a whole list of new material and just watch him
just figure it out.
And then, of course, watch him figure it out. And it's like watching a fucking ice skater just be like, how did he land that? You know, you're just like, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah.
It's literally poetry in motion.
And I heard that Chris Rock does, when he has something new, he just literally reads it. He doesn't even inflection or none of that stuff. He's just like, so a guy walks into a bar and blah, 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 blah. How'd that go over? Like, like that's what I've heard. I've never actually seen it. But I heard a great thing
that he said.
But okay.
He just a quote recently.
No, that's totally fine.
A quote that he said recently was he likes when he's on stage and the audience thinks that he's hit his pinnacle, like he's crushing.
Yeah.
And then he goes, the best feeling that he loved, and I'm, you know, just paraphrasing, was when that moment's happening, that he knows, oh man, you don't even know yet. Like I haven't even leveled this up yet. I haven't even set it up for you yet. And you're loving this, you know? And I was like, God, what kind of feeling that must
be. Yeah, I mean, and that's the blessing and the curse of being Chris Rock. Because you walks into a room, it's announced that Chris Rock's going to be there. There's a 5-minute ovation. He hasn't said a damn thing yet. I've seen Jerry Seinfeld get a 5-minute ovation, and he's just like, shut up, I haven't said a damn word. Like, come on. Like, to the point where he's like, all right, stop it, stop it, stop it. So, but enough about Jerry Seinfeld. He gets plenty of exposure.
Jerry Seinfeld.
Let's bring this back to Joe Sib. Okay. So, your brand new album, it's called Nowhere Near the Top. I'm holding the album on vinyl.
Yeah.
It's like, this has got to be a great feeling to be able to put this out. Like,
I love it.
This is like, this is the culmination of how many years of work at this point?
That right there is 7 years of work.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, 7 years.
You've got to be super proud of this. I mean, you got to be pretty stoked. Like, just first of all, the face you're making as you're skateboarding.
You know who I was with when we took that? Kyle Kinane.
Oh, were you really?
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah.
We were in Phoenix together.
Okay.
And he's a BMX rider.
Yeah, totally.
And he's like, hey, man. I don't know how to do a hey.
Hey, I'm Kyle Kinane.
Hey, it's Kinane.
Yeah.
We're going riding tomorrow with these guys. Would you want to go? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, all right. So then we met these guys and they picked us up at the hotel.
Uh-huh.
And they took us out to the skate park in Phoenix and it was great. And I was skateboarding, they were BMX riding. And then this guy named Kyle Clarkson, who's a famous BMX photographer, mm-hmm. I didn't know, he was there. And he goes, hey man, let's get some photos of you guys, you know, riding together. I go, okay, cool. And then he sent them to me and that photo was in there. And I always just liked it. I'm like, And then when we came up with an album cover, I sent it to the guy. I go, hey, I got an idea for an album cover, and I was kind of just messing around, and I sent him the picture with nowhere near the top, and he's like, we have to use that.
It's funny how that stuff kind of comes together.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, it's very cool. I mean, like, the artwork is great. Like, it looks like it's which I think very much fits your aesthetic. It looks like a punk rock comedy album.
Yeah.
Which is basically you, from the Vans on the skateboard. This is the Joe Sib outfit.
There you
go. Like, if you're going to buy a Halloween outfit titled Joe Sib, maybe put on a black shirt instead of a white shirt.
Yeah,
what is the Joe Sib outfit?
It's probably the one time I've ever worn a white t-shirt. And I love the font that we did.
Yeah.
I was sitting, we were looking at different colors of what they were going to write it in. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, man, what's a black and white album cover that I really, really dig? And then I looked and I was like, oh, wait, isn't Rocket to Russia?
Yeah.
Ramones, isn't that black and white? And I went and I go into my albums and I pull it out and it's a black and white photo of the Ramones. And then I just sent the picture of that. I go, find that same color and just put my name in that font. Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you're going to copy the styles, copy the styles of the best sometimes too.
Go.
So 7 years of your life. And now the material in this is very much you being a dad.
Absolutely.
But not being the greatest dad.
Yeah.
And being fine with that. Because like,
I'm not.
It's like, I am not the greatest example of how to be a perfect father.
No, not
at all.
And
here's why.
Yeah.
You know, and you got to go into all the reasons why.
Yeah. I love my kids more than anything in this world. They know it. You know, you use the word toolbox for comedy.
Yeah.
I feel that that's the same way for parenting.
Mm-hmm.
We're all given a parental toolbox from our parents.
Mm-hmm.
I always say that, you know, my mom and dad did a great job. They got divorced. It was the 80s and they were great.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, parenting today and parenting then, I mean, wow, we do all the things that our parents didn't necessarily do for us. And, mm-hmm. and I feel you're learning as you go. Like I always say that, you know, for me being a guy that was so against authority and I hated people telling me what to do. And I was so, so just middle finger to everyone at all times. Then all of a sudden you have kids and you're the authority and it's a weird relationship I have with my kids because they're not even, they're like great kids, but there's still these conversations that come up all the time where like my daughter's, you know, I remember she was going to these friends' house and, you know, they were like making pot brownies and mm-hmm. I'm driving her there and she's like, oh yeah, Mom, what are you doing? And she's like, oh, well, you know, these kids are doing this and that and they're making brownies. And I'm like, whoa, like you're going to the house? She's like, yeah. I'm like, well, what are you? And then there's a part of me like, aren't I supposed to not take you there?
Yeah.
And she's like, Dad, I don't do drugs and they're going to eat these brownies and I'm going to hang out and we're going to watch a movie. And and then there's a part of me, oh, so I'm the dumb dad.
Yeah.
Like, oh, really? Like, you're actually the dealer. Like, give me your drugs. Let me see that backpack.
Yeah.
But then I realize, wait a minute. Oh, those are all the feelings that maybe I might have learned from my own parents.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I'm actually having a conversation with this kid and she's not a moron. And I always like to say, you know, like even when she's gone to parties, you know, like I'll show up and it's just such a different generation of these kids. They're back in these backyards and they're hanging out having conversations and sure there's edibles and there's, you know, whatever going on, but it's not like the party I went to where the first thing I would do when I would get to a party is just throw everything in the pool. Like, yeah, I'm gonna fucking throw I remember every party we went to, we were so out of control. And it's I always like to say these kids, at least the ones I'm coming in contact with via my daughter and son, they're not morons.
Yeah.
You know, they talk about going to college.
Yeah.
And their biggest fear is if they have to go to a community college, where I always joke around, like, are there other colleges? Like, there's another school besides that? Like, you know?
Community college and or Harvard.
Yeah.
There's nothing in between.
Yeah. They just are like, oh, and you know, so that's kind of the tug of war that I have. The thing that I didn't want to do is like, I don't want to be like, you know, known as like you know, I remember I was talking to a comic one night and someone was like, oh, dude, I love all your stories about kids. I mean, I wish my dad was like you. Or like, you know, I'll meet other people like, we're about to have our first kid. I hope we're cool like you. And, you know, and then I was like, oh, great. Like, I'm the dad comic. And then I forgot what comic said it to me. It might have been like Dom Herrera or something. But he's like, dude, if people are thinking you're that, just take it.
Yeah.
And don't fight it. And then that's what I realized.
I mean, Jeff Ross is the roast guy. I'm sure he's made millions of dollars off of
yeah.
the roast.
And guy. I'm not saying I'm, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, what you're saying.
I was just, you know, I'm not comparing myself to like, I'm that guy. But I do know this, that like, I was trying back in the day to write other material and it wasn't funny. And then the first time I talked about, you know, something my son and I having a conversation that was real, that actually happened, then I got a laugh from the audience.
Yeah, I mean, but well, I also think it's because people recognize real, they recognize authenticity. And if like, you're not some crazy bachelor living the bachelor life. You're a dad who grew up punk rock, who grew up like in the Ramones,
love.
And he's trying to reconcile authority as the authority figure.
Yeah.
And that's you. And that's why no one can steal your act, though, either, because there is no one else that specifically has those touch points. Yeah. I mean, there are some married guys out there, there's some parents out there, there's some punk rock guys out there.
Yeah.
But like when you put it all together, that's what makes it uniquely you. And that's what finding your voice is and all that kind of crap.
It's so true. Because for a long time, I avoided all the music stuff. Like I was like, oh, I don't want to talk about that. They won't get it. And then I remember one night,
I get it, dude.
Yeah, but you know, but the thing is, though, is that, you know, hey, if you're, you know, the other night I was at this show and it was two shows in one night. One night I was at I'm at the Hermosa Magic Club, which is it's like the, you know, the premier, like, you know, comedy club, and everyone, you know, you're working super hard to get, you know, your 7 minutes in there, and you go there and you perform. And then the next night I'm at a show at a comic book store down, and it was oddly enough in Manhattan Beach. But the thing that was cool was I was able to do, I had this Bad Religion bit that I was always like, hey, I wonder if everyone would get it. And all the Bad Religion bit is that they had me open up for them for their 30th anniversary as a comic.
Yeah.
So as a kid in my band, I'd opened up with them tons of times.
In your brain.
Yeah. No, I actually had toured with Bad Religion. Yeah, when I was in Wax, we opened up for them. When I was in Frontline, that's how I met those guys. And when I started doing stand-up, they were like so, Jay Bentley, the bass player, was like so supportive. He'd come to shows, blah, 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 blah. And this one time he was like, dude, how funny would it be, you know, if you opened up for us in at this show? And I was like, okay, I'll do it. And the whole bit is about how bad it went. But the thing that was so great is that I was so psyched on is that I took this story that was really long and I just shortened it down and was able to get people that have never heard of Bad Religion.
Yeah.
They heard of the name by just saying to them, like, for the people that know who Bad Religion is, you know what kind of fans they have. Mm-hmm. And for the people that don't know who Bad Religion is, you can figure out by the name of the band.
Yeah, of course.
What kind of fans are going to
have.
So then the audience is like, okay, we're on the ride.
Yeah, yeah.
You're opening for a rock band that has gnarly fans.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay,
they get
I'm
it.
In.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's been nice to now kind of put those bits or little, you know, stories into the, because then I think it makes so much more sense of why this weird back and forth with my kids. Cause it's probably more on my end than on their end. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And I mean, that's what, but it's that experience. It goes back to like, you know, you can't run away from who you are and shy away from that. And like, once you start tackling that stuff head on, it's when it happens. It's like that's like when Louis had the turning point, Louis C.K., of like, I'm going to stop being this absurdist guy and I'm going to talk about why my kids are assholes. But that's when he became Louis C.K.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, there's plenty, like when George Carlin's became, you know, more counterculture as opposed to just the button up guy on that's when he became George fucking Carlin.
Yeah.
So like those are the turning points a lot of comedians, and I'm not comparing you to Carlin and Louis. I know that you don't, you're not. I know that you
just, so everyone that's listening, there's no comparison. And I want to go on record saying that
but it's like when those guys started not worrying about what people will think of them as the individual, they started to become who they actually were.
So, but
it takes time.
It does.
And you know, you now have the record, and now it's like, oh, I'm stoked. I actually not I mean, granted, in 2017, there's more comedy records than ever, but not everyone has a comedy record. Not everyone has a label coming to them and saying, hey, I want to put this out. Hey, I want to press this on vinyl.
Yeah.
Hey, I like what you have to say because it's a unique voice. And
that was the one thing I got to say, Matt, that I was, because you and I had this conversation. Mm-hmm. Everyone was asking me, why aren't you put it on side one? Why isn't it on side one? And we released Eric Griffin's first comedy record.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that was, we were going into that world. And what ended up happening was I was just like, you know what? I was like, if it's on side one, it's too easy. And I want someone to come along and say, hey man, I want to put a record out of yours. And when the 800-pound gorilla guy said that was like, that was a big thing. And it, you know, as a comic, and I know that, you know, you're not, you know, looking for validation, but it did make me feel like, okay, cool. This is going to come out on another label. And if it does do, it's going to sink or swim on its own.
Yeah.
And that was really important.
And that's great. It's kind of like you're waiting for those certain things to happen. I mean, like, so I guess the question is, like, you know, what is, like, everyone has milestones. Album's been a milestone you've crossed off. Is it getting a late night spot? Is it getting a tour? Is it, like, what are your other milestones that you want to knock off your comedy career?
I mean, I think, okay, it goes back to the germ. It goes back to the germs. I want to sing for the germs. it goes back to, I think there, this is, if you said right now I can, you know, magic wand, these are the things that could happen to you. I would love to do a late night spot.
Okay.
Because as a kid growing up on television, it still means something, and I would love to do it while my parents are both still alive, because it would just be fun to say, here we are in New York, it'd probably be New York, because
Conan's out here.
Yeah, Conan's out here. Wherever it is would be amazing. It would just be amazing to have that moment with them. I talked to Nick Guerra, who did Fallon, and he's a comic. I do a ton of shows out here with him. And one night after a set, we were just sitting outside, and I said, hey, you know, can I ask you, like, what's been the feeling from, you know, 2 weeks ago when you did late night? And he said, what part of the question do you want me to answer? Mm-hmm. How has it been, you know, financially? Am I getting booked more? Or how has it been personally? I said, answer them both. And he was so honest. And he said, having my mom there with me when I did the show was one of the greatest moments. Because she was there, and she's been with me on this, you know, my entire life and this entire journey. And it was just like, boom. And then he said, as a comic too, personally, it just felt, I felt so just, yes, I got underneath my belt. I have, he was saying, now I'm the best comic ever.
Yeah, those days are over of being made king after you perform in front of Carson.
He said, hey, Joe, I'm waiting in line with you to go on tonight.
Yeah.
They didn't care.
Yeah.
And he goes, Joe, when you walk up on stage, did they say, like, you know, when they give you, hey, what do you want me to say before you go on stage? You know, we both know. No one ever gets more excited because you did a spot on Letterman or Conan or any of that. You just say, come into the stage, and hopefully you're funny that night, you know?
Exactly.
So his answer, late night spot, I would love that. I think if there was just one thing, all I would love to get to is get to a point where I could go out on the road, you know, here in the States, and I could go to this, you know, cities that you want to go to and go out on the road. And I would love to be at a place where, you know, that 300 to 500, you know, some nights more, come out to the show.
To see you. It's not a papered room.
Exactly.
That's the goal of every comic out there, is to be a working comic.
Yeah.
And
not like, yeah, we got our tickets for free because they come with nachos.
Exactly.
Like,
and
I have plenty of those shows. It would be
everyone
great.
Does. Yeah. Everyone does.
I would love to get to a point where, you know, it's like, you, I have ideas. You know, my son and I drive around, and I, you know, I'm always like, oh, dude, if we were doing this, you know, I would have this music before, and I would, you know, I would love to have a band. Like, yeah, the band does this, and then instead of, you know, maybe instead of comics, we have a host, and I have like a you know, punk rock karaoke, and they're the openers, and through the whole night before I go on, everyone's singing songs, and maybe even, you know, just ideas like that to make a show. Like, I would love to make it. When you come to a show, just if there was a dream would be like a comedy show that you're like, did I really start sweating at that comedy show? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
opposed
totally.
To like, I went, there was two guys, there was a couple comics, yeah. And then the guy got up and he did his thing. Okay, that was cool. Like, I'd love to get into a place where you could say, you know what? I'm going to try to do something totally different and bring a show, which goes back to, you know, I was into magic when I was a little kid. You know, we had a circus that stayed at my mom and dad's house. Like, we lived on this ranch, and like, I saw them rehearsing for like a whole summer.
Oh, that's great.
You know, so it's like, you know, it's weird shit like that, that like, I'm not saying I want to have a circus out there, but like, but I would love to do that. And then, you know, I'd also, you know, I think, the next thing right in front of me is take like these stories of music and who I was and all those ingredients and bridge them together with who I am now and film that somewhere. But I also like, I got asked like, hey, we want to film. And I was like, yeah, but I don't want it to be just another, like the last thing we need is another special on these networks, because no one knows who I am. So if I'm going to make a special, I just don't want it to be a jerk off dick stroke. I want it to be
a uniqueness to it. Like, Zach Galifianakis live at the Purple Onion is a great
Or Neil
example.
Brennan.
Yeah, or Neil Brennan.
Dude, like, Neil Brennan with the three mics. I mean, dude, when I saw that, I was like, okay.
Yeah, because like, it's like there's interstitials, there's this, that, the other thing. Like,
and it's different.
Like, here's one thing that pops into my head all the time and it's a great story. And if you want to tell it, that's fine. If you don't, that's fine too. Is I saw you do a rock and comedy show, I'm sorry, at Cobb's Comedy Club Sketch Fest a couple years back.
Greg Behrendt. How many times have we had said Greg Behrendt?
We have. Greg Behrendt's been the theme.
Right, want you right now. Whoever tells, whoever emails me at joesib22@gmail.com.
Okay.
How many times, how many times we have said the word Greg Behrendt?
Greg Behrendt.
How many times we've said it?
Yeah.
I will send you a free copy on vinyl. Okay. Actually, the one that Matt's holding.
Yeah, the one I'm holding right now.
Right
now. Send it out. Yeah.
I will send it to you.
Oh, all right, great. I'm thinking at least 10.
I think we're near, with Greg Behrendt?
Well, yeah, Greg Behrendt. At least 10 near Greg Behrendt.
We should call him and be like, hello, who is this? Greg Behrendt. Dude, that counts. That one just counts.
Yeah, it totally counts. So from now until the end of the podcast.
So I came up to San Francisco, and you remember that it was you and Ellis?
Me and Ellis.
But you remember that lineup?
It was great. It was you. I want to say Chris Hardwick.
Chris Hardwick.
And there was someone else.
The woman who came out and did I Like the Coco.
I'm in love with the Coco, Natasha Leggero.
Yeah.
Yes, she did the mock-up song. But it's a great, and this is the great example of a Joe Sib story, is you told the story, and I didn't know this at the time, but you had prepped me before it, is you were basically the inspiration for the intro to Weezer's Sweater Song, Undone the Sweater Song. That guy who was doing the talking?
Matt Sharp did.
Yes, it was Matt Sharp, but he's basically mimicking a voicemail you left Weezer.
Yeah.
And when they recorded. And like, that's one of those things that's like, first of all, why would you lie about something like that? Second of all, why doesn't the rest of the world know this? And third of all, this is a story you can tell and it can be put into a special.
Yeah.
It can be a minute and a half animated clip that lives online that'll probably get 1.5 million views because it's like, it's such a ridiculously crazy story.
Yeah.
Like, that's, to me, is like a quintessential like Joe Sib type of like marriage of comedy and the music part of you is a story like
that. You know,
and you have plenty of those.
Yeah. And you know what? And that story is such an example of like, and this is such a, to everyone that's listening, man, it just never turns out the way you think it's going to. That's been my new mantra has been that, because my whole, like when that happened, I was at such a dark place in my life that I never thought I would ever even tell anybody that there was this possibility that they were
giant song.
Yeah. Because at the time it's just another band. It's no different than, you know, Weezer wasn't Weezer yet.
Yes.
They were just some guys that lived in an apartment that covered my band's songs.
Yeah.
They were just friends of mine. They were Rivers wasn't Rivers. He was he was a guy that was, you know, super, super quiet and shy. And wore glasses, and at the time, you know, he had his leg was messed up, and he had to wear a special shoe, you know. So you're the last guy that you thought would go on to have this huge career, which I'll tell you, that's the way it always is. Once again, it never turns out the way that you think.
Of course.
So the fact that this, and then the record goes on to be
huge.
Huge.
It was one of the biggest records of like the 90s.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And then on, and we're talking about the Blue Record. Then on top of it, for my own personal, I guess it was this. You know, it's the only time in my life that like there was this like just this thorn in my side with these guys. And then also how sick it was with I was having this whole battle with them and this thing in my head.
Yeah.
And I mean, and it was existing here and there, but not to the level that I took it to.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and then on top of it to find out that like, you know, and I remember years like this is like probably like 5 years ago, or no, like maybe even longer, like 7 years ago, Rivers was writing a book on Weezer and someone from their camp reached out and said, "Hey man, would you mind talking to Rivers?" And I was like, "Yeah, no problem." So we got on the phone and we talked for like a good time. And I said, "Hey man, there's one thing I got to ask you." And he's like, "Yeah, sure." And I go, "Hey dude, you know, I always had heard that, you know, that the beginning of the Sweater song was kind of like," he's like, and he just told, that's when he told me, he goes, "Yeah, dude, you know, not, yeah, yeah dude." He goes, "You know, I hope you didn't take offense to that. We just liked you guys and your band so much that you left a message and we used to always want to go to those parties and you'd invite us. And and we were like, we should have that at the beginning of the record." And, you know, and then.
So you're thinking it's a shot across the bow and they're like, "No, it's, we're hanging your photo on the wall."
Yeah. They're like, "Dude, we used to cover your songs." He's like, "Joe, we," and I was like, "Wow, really?" So, and then it went into this, like, that's so cool. And then the fact, now when I hear the song, it's like, you know, my son will be like, "That's supposed to be my dad." You know, like, and it's funny because anyone that knows me, they're like, "Holy, that does sound like you."
Yeah, it does. And it's one of those things where it's, I mean, like, you got to take it as the compliment that it actually is.
Dude,
but I'm
stoked on it.
But
now,
you got to get past your own bullshit to realize that I am totally, this isn't what I think it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're not competition. They're actually paying homage to you. So it's, but those are the types of stories that I think that there's great humor in. It's a uniquely Joe Sib story. No one else can tell that fucking story. So like, if someone rips it off, it's like, that's Joe Sib. You can't be Joe Sib, you know. But that's what I think. I think that's what a Joe Sib special could look like.
Yeah,
it could be.
See, I'd love to do that.
Yeah, it could be you on stage, start setting up the joke. "Hey, I want to tell you about this one time that I had a fake feud in my head with Weezer.
Yeah,
and they didn't even know about it.
Yeah,
and it goes into this whole story.
Yeah,
you know. So like, I think that is like kind of like where, what you can do.
The thing that I'd love to do, like that was the thing that we were kind of talking about is bridging those types of stories and finding the best ones.
Yes.
You know, because like I have this great Social Distortion story, I have this great Ramon story, I have all these, you know, these stories, these music stories, and then now even the new material that I've been doing a lot that once again has a lot to do with parenting, but it's more on the parenting of not these little people anymore. It's like the Pop Brownie story. Like, really, is this happening?
They're
right
adults.
Now?
They're becoming adults.
Yeah. So, yeah. That, and you know, people talking about going to college and all these crazy things financially, you know, taking my daughter to Coachella, you know, I never in my entire life thought, you know, I'd go to Coachella. I went with my daughter this year, and just that whole experience with, you know, it's just, you know, you have this little person that you make, and then all of a sudden during Lady Gaga, you're like, there's 140,000 people here, and somewhere out there in this sea of people is, you know, I was there with my wife, is the person we made.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you're just like, talk about anxiety, dude.
Yeah, I can only imagine. I mean,
yeah, it's crazy. But
it is.
That's the type of special that I'd love to make. But I want it to be, like I was saying to the guy the other day, from 800 Pound Gorilla, I said the only way I want it to be is it has to be something where you're flipping through and you would go, "Hey man, did you see the thing with that dude with like the slick back hair?
Yeah,
like you should check that out."
Yeah,
like it's gonna have to be like that.
Yeah, I mean, but and there's so many different ways to do it now. Yeah. And you can go with a streaming service, Netflix, CISO, all that stuff. Yeah. Or, you know what, put it up, make it yourself, put it out there into the world, see how many shares you can get on social media, because it's just a great fucking story.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, I listen to Bert Kreischer's podcast all the time.
Yeah.
He's like, he's got incredible stories. And he kind of just accepted the fact on his last special on Showtime, they didn't want to necessarily release his big stories, the machine story and all that kind of stuff, skydiving with Rachel Ray. They didn't want to put that out into the world, but he convinced them to let him put out on social media, and it went on social media and it blew up, like 25 million views. It's like, well, that's what you need. You like, those are the things that I think people stick with you, because who doesn't want to hear a good story about the guy from Weezer, the Weezer song, you know what I mean? So it's stuff like that, which is uniquely you. And that's also like, there's not many people out there that have that ability, that in their catalog.
And I want to get them out there too. You know, those stories. Because
like most comics have stories about airline food.
Yeah.
Because every comic does. Because every comic travels all the time.
Yeah.
They don't always have stories about social distortion in the Ramones. So,
Yeah. Well, you know, hopefully that would, so those would be the three things. You know, I'd love to do a late night spot. I'd love to get to the point where I could do bigger things. Because I would love to have an opportunity to put together like a real show. Like, like I said, like that you would leave going, how did I go to the comedy show and actually sweat?
Yeah.
Like, I'd love that. And then, you know, putting together some sort of, God, that word special just sounds, sounds so like.
But it is.
It's so like, it's well, even no, like how I feel. Well,
make the special special again.
Yeah, there
you
go.
Gotta do. The special isn't special nowadays.
That's what we're going to say.
Yeah. That's you know what? Why don't we end it on that too?
Yeah.
Make the special special again. So, Joe, I want to thank you for sitting down for me. It's been a solid hour.
Matt, thank you.
Stuff.
Yeah, I really appreciate it.
Yeah. I love talking to the movers and shakers and the comedy minds and the.
One thing I got to say before we bail.
Okay, what's that?
That there was two things that came through my head, and I was like, I got to remember to say.
Okay,
this.
What's that?
You know, one thing Jerry Seinfeld said in the last documentary that he was in that I loved so much was, it's towards the end, and it's the documentary. What's the latest one that came out that he was in?
There's I'm Dying Up Here. No, not that one.
That's the Showtime show.
I know what you're talking about. It just came out.
It just came out.
There's like I Am Comic, I Am Road Comic, and then I Am Something Comic.
Yeah, and it has.
Then there's another one too. Star. I know what you're talking about.
It was the most recent one that he's in.
We'll edit it in post.
Yeah, and he says, you know, after all, can't just being a comedian be enough?
Yeah.
And when he said that, sure, it's coming from Jerry Seinfeld with all the money and all that. But I didn't take it that way. I took it as like, yeah, he's right. Like, why can't being a comic and doing your spot and then going afterwards and eating the sandwich with your friends that are comics and drinking the coffee and going over the words or doing what we're doing right here and just loving that be enough?
Yeah.
And that sometimes I have to really remember that. You know, one of my favorite movies is Broadway Danny Rose, Woody Allen. Everyone listening, you got to get that. Just watch it. It's a movie for comics about comics. And it's it just takes such a snapshot of that lifestyle. Last thing I was going to say too was, one of the best advice you ever gave to me, and this was
super,
No.
Okay.
This was super, super early on. And this is for all comics to hear, was I was...
Put it on record. The best advice that Matt gives.
Best advice you ever gave me was I was trying to do this and do that, and it a lot. Some things weren't coming into place, and I was talking to you about it, and you said, you know, Joe, you know, you want to be careful because you don't want to be seen too soon.
Yeah.
And when you said that, I was like, point taken. You know, basically like
it's good advice. I can't take full credit for
go
that.
Go back into the woodshed and like. Do some more work before you really start hanging it out there. And I would say that added like another good 2 to 3 years before like that record was recorded, because I was like, he's right. You know, like don't for once in your life, just take the time to do it right.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you took the advice, even though I mean, that's great advice for anyone. And it's definitely not originally mine.
It's not?
No. I mean, but you only have one chance to be seen for the first time. I mean, but there's you only have one chance to be seen for the first time. And there's a lot of comics that are like, I'm huge here, so I'm going to wait. It's get good somewhere, then go to your New York and LA's too. So it's a pretty common thing, but it's very true because.
And the thing is that it was true in the sense that it really, like, at that point where I was at, I was like, I want to take that advice.
Well, I'm glad you did, because I think the result is nowhere near the top.
There we go.
the Joe Sib album.
There you go. Hey, and if anyone wants, you know what, like we said earlier, tell me how many times we said the word Greg Barrett in this episode. Email me at joesib22@gmail.com.
Yes.
And I'll pick a winner and send you a copy of the record for free.
The other thing I want to shout out real quick is you have a fantastic podcast called Rad Parenting,
yes,
which
I
is
do.
Kind of like It's kind of like you giving the advice you would give, and then you have a professional giving the advice a professional should give about parenting.
Our tagline is, she's the expert, he's not.
Yes.
And she being Anaya Bogue, who wrote the book, 9 Ways That We're Screwing Up Our Girls and How We Can Stop. She has also Stand Up for Girls program that she started in Los Angeles. She speaks all over the world. She has a foundation she started in Guatemala for young girls. I met her about 3 years ago. And it was at a time when I was like I want to start, I want to do a podcast, but I don't want to do it on music. I want to do something different. Not that I don't love music, but I just want to try to do something different. At the time, I was looking at having a 13-year-old, and I was like, wow, I would love to have some help with this. So we just started, I would just bring in topics and just real topics like, hey, check it out. You know, a year ago, my daughter thought I was cool. Now, overnight, she thinks I'm lame. Like, literally, someone came into her room and said, your dad is lame.
Yeah.
And she believed him.
Switch flipped.
What do I do?
Yeah, yeah.
And we had, you know, we do episode on that. Or, like, this week we have Breaking the Gender Box, and it's all about that whole notion, boys will be boys. And it's also just real. Like, I always say my kids someday when they listen to it will be like, oh my gosh, like our whole life is documented on these podcasts. Because I'll bring in things like the other, you know, one time I was just honest. I was like, I can't stand when these other parents bring their kids to my house and their kids just are rude and and thrash my shit. Like, I'm like, dude, are you standing on my couch right now?
Yeah.
And then they vibe me for vibing them. And they're like, well, you know, that's how kids are. And I'm like, no, you're being a lazy parent.
Yeah.
We had a whole episode on that.
Lazy parenting.
Yeah, you know, because it's really turned into this. It's not a show about like, oh, I can't stand my kids. It's not that. No, it's really like, I always say this, it's 30 to 40 minutes of some real conversation that's fun because I'm going to be a part of it.
Yeah.
But you are going to leave with some meat on the bone. Like, hey, you know what, man?
Yeah.
Thanks for telling me that. We get emails all the time from parents that go, wow, man, like, you know, I really love your discussion about that. And you know what? I'm going to put those, like, when I get home tonight, I'm going to put those three things into play. And that's kind of, I always tell Anaya, like, we got to land it with a real answer. I don't want it just to be like, having kids is tough.
All right,
next week we'll be back. Like, I want it to be, I want us to like, well, okay, what do you do?
That's great. So, yeah, so Rad Parenting, check that out.
Yep.
It's a great podcast.
Radparenting.com.
And check out Nowhere Near the Top, the latest from Joe Sib out on 800 Pound Gorilla Records.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming on the show, Joe.
Hey.
I'm glad we finally did this in the brand new studio.
In the brand new studio.
Yeah, so this is great. So
there you go.
Thanks again.
Late.
And that was our interview with Joe Sib. Super excited to have him on the podcast. Really, really want to thank him for always supporting what we do over here at the Laugh Button and always being a champion of comedy. He's a really good dude, solid
interesting
dude.
Guy.
Yeah, definitely want to thank him also for inviting us out to his house and taping it and breaking in the new podcast studio. It was very nice of you, Joe Sib. Next time you're on the East Coast, I'm sure we will catch up and talk. But in the meantime, check us out, thelaughbutton.com. Anywhere you can type in the Laugh Button into your socials, you'll find us. You can find us on riotcast.com/The Laugh Button and check out all the stuff going on. We got some shows coming up. We have some merch in our merch store, so all that kind of good stuff. So definitely keep a track of definitely check in on what's going on in the Laugh Button by visiting laughbutton.com. You can follow me personally at I am Kleinschmidt, and you can follow Bram personally at
Bramphetamine on the Instagram, Bramfilter on Twitter, and MetalInsider.net for all your metal news, analysis, gossip, fun, other stuff.
So until then, we'll catch you on the next time here on the Laugh Button Podcast.
Bye. See ya.
Grand Canyon University's RN to BSN online degree program makes earning your bachelor's in nursing possible. Balance online coursework with local in-person clinicals to position yourself for potential leadership opportunities in the time you have from wherever you are, leaving room for what matters. Achieve your goals with your personalized plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.